The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now, later on, we'll hear from Danny Mills as Leeds' automatic promotion hopes took a major blow over the weekend. We'll also get his thoughts on the Manchester derby. The latest in the Premier League this evening, 69 minutes on the clock. It's nil all between Spurs and Brighton. Danny Rose has just thumped one with his right foot. Going top corner, saved ultimately. It's still nil all there. Watford nil, Southampton 1. Shane Long with the fastest goal in Premier League history, no less. 7.69 seconds, breaking Ledley King's previous mark of 10 seconds. Back in the year 2000. Meanwhile, at the Talla Stadium, Shamrock Rovers nil, Bohemians 1. Bowes with a penalty. Dinny Corcoran, penalty was saved, but he tucked away the rebound. So it's 1-0 Bowes at half time. Now, let's go over to Pat Nevin.
Smalling's head, but spills out kindly to Sigurdsson. Everton on the break here. Sigurdsson plays the ball into the path of Walcott. Walcott's in the box. He takes a shot, and it's there. Theo Walcott puts the ball past Sammy De Gea, and Everton are out the gate. They're home and hosed. Manchester United getting absolutely spanked here at Goodison Park. There's 63 minutes on the clock. It's Everton 4, Manchester United 0.
Dear, oh dear, Pat Nevin, 4-0. 4-0, 4-0, 4-0. They're getting angry, Manchester United fans. They're confused. Who knows what's going on? Ed Woodward is sitting there, and I would love to be inside his head right now.
It's a really tough one, isn't it? Remember when Solskjaer got the job, and I kind of mentioned it might be an idea to give him a one-year contract instead of a three-year one, because there was no need to give him the 3 years. But no, I wouldn't be blaming Solskjaer. He's got what he's got there, and they just look like a bunch of players. It's beneath them to go and try that hard every single week. You've noticed that with a couple of players. The two that jump out, oddly, are Lukaku and Pogba. We know how brilliant they are, but can they put that effort in every single week? Now, they're not the only ones that have been underperforming. But in the Premier League, if you don't get 9, 10, at least really going for it, you'll get done. And Everton, they've been up for it. It was at the Everton game the week before at Goodison when they beat Arsenal. And they just livelier, just fancied it more, just battled in a little bit more. And that's the way it is in the Premier League. Having said that, I don't know if you've been watching the Spurs game there. Brighton don't look as if they fancy having much of a go, just right. Defending the whole time.
I haven't seen much of it, I must say. Everton have now beaten Chelsea, Arsenal and Manchester United at home. And it seems like they've come through that sticky patch. Is Marco Silva starting to put his stamp on this side and they're shaping up reasonably nicely?
I would love to know the reasons why they had that horrible dip, and it looked awful. You couldn't really tell. I mean, sometimes it's one or two players that are just off the game. You know, I go on about Sigurdsson. If he's playing well, they generally play really well. He had a quite quiet time for a period of time. Then Richarlison was actually going through a period where he was getting a few boos. But, I mean, in the end, everybody up for it working. And Calvert-Lewin, to be honest, has been a revelation. But these are all players that Manchester United wouldn't have looked at. They wouldn't have considered. They've been good enough. And they're all outshining what Manchester United have got, certainly in that game there. It's a stunning thing to see, that amount of players. But quite often it's like a cancer that goes through a team. If there's two or three not playing, then they'll just think, well, wait a minute, I'm doing double the work to cover for him. Why should I be doing that? And it kind of feels a little bit like that sometimes. But it's hard to tell. Not being inside it, it's very, very strange to see from the outside. Nothing wrong with having bad games. That's fine. That happens. You go through bad periods. Lack of effort, absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah, even in the first 10 minutes, Everton were on top. I think they had three corners in those opening 10 minutes. De Gea made a really good save from Richarlison, and there was no wake-up. There was no sudden impetus from United, oh, we better get our act together here. You know, there's Champions League football at stake. Even if you were being wholly cynical about the whole thing, their Champions League bonus salary money might be of some importance to them. Maybe that's not a realistic motivation, but there was just nothing. And then even the fallout is as interesting. Gary Neville kind of got things going. Here's a little snippet.
I'm
not disrespectful.
I'm furious, to be honest with you, the fact that he's had to go over and apologise for them. I've often said that clubs over the last 7 years, if you've got weeds in the garden, you've got to get rid of them. But there's some Japanese knotweed at that football club, and it's attacking the foundations of the house that needs dealing with properly. The idea that Ollie, a few weeks ago, I said that, you know, Jose Mourinho, the fans stuck with him but wanted him out at the end. They ain't going to want Ole Gunnar Solskjaer out. They're not going to turn Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Those players now, the well and truly, their heads are on the line. I watched Manchester City yesterday, who Manchester United are trying to get to in terms of the top of the football, top of the Premier League, and Liverpool. Bernardo Silva, Raheem Sterling, Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva. Far better players that are in that Manchester United dressing room who work twice as hard. Everton run 4 kilometres further in the first half. Everton. And then you watch this mob out here, Liverpool, who are the biggest rivals. They die for every single inch on the pitch. And Manchester United players, honestly, it's embarrassing just watching some of those out there today. I'm absolutely furious. Full belief in Ole to do what he needs to do. The club obviously will support him, but there's a big problem. And I have to say, that performance today was rancid.
Well, it's time to name names, isn't it, Gary? I mean, you didn't want to do that before the game, but you're talking about players who you're saying are rotten in that dressing room.
I don't need to name names, Dave. Everyone knows who they are. They're in the newspapers every single day. They're on social media every single day.
Well, I think people would assume you're talking about Paul Pogba, but before the game today, you said it wasn't Pogba.
He'll deal with them. Every single player who does not have the attitude, forget talent. I've been sort of, if you like, over the last maybe 12 to 18 months, myself falling into the trap of talking about, oh, they've got potential, they've got talent. Forget it. If they don't work hard and haven't got the attitude to run around in that shirt, get rid of them.
So that was Neville. And on Pogba, seeing as he keeps coming up, but he's the one they've pushed out for the interview tomorrow pre the derby with Sky Sports. And he's saying, the way we played, the performance itself, the team, it was disrespectful. We let the manager speak and the staff in the dressing room after the match. They spoke the truth. They said what happened in the game. It's not respectful for ourselves, what we did in the pitch, not respectful for the teammates, for the staff, for the people, for the kit man, for everyone, was Paul Pogba's point. Like, if you take that team yesterday, De Gea in goal, who's going through a bizarre period, it really is unbelievable. The back four was Lindelof, Smalling and Jones, still Smalling and Jones in the centre of that defence all these years on, and Dalot at left back. Pogba, Matic, Fred, Rashford, Lukaku, Martial. It's what we always say about Manchester United. On paper, it looks very, very reasonable, certainly more than reasonable enough to go to Goodison. Taking your point, they don't seem to be a team who can turn it on every week. When you're in the midst of 5 defeats in 7 and looking at 6 defeats in 8, that might surely be a time where you would say, OK, we actually need to up it again at least for a week or two. That's the really worrying thing.
Yeah, but you need the whole group to do that. What Neville was saying there, similar to what I was saying, but he was saying it a lot more passionately, with a bit of heart and a bit. It felt personal to him. But you look at the best teams; they have got a group spirit. They have got a team spirit. They have. There's no one individual, and if one individual, however big a name he is, he turns off or doesn't do it or hasn't got the right attitude, the others will have a go at him. That's not happening at Manchester United. Absolutely, 100% not. And I just wonder, and I don't know, but I just wonder, I've played in teams before where, you know, the group works well, but then the strongest character, the one that was holding the glue of the ethos together, suddenly is no longer the strongest character. And another character comes in, and it might be the best player. If he's not the right type of character to get the right group spirit, you're kind of lost, because the people that, you know, footballers can be quite sheep-like as well. They'll follow that character, even if he's doing the wrong things or not showing the real spirit. And you talked about that team there. You go through some of them. Martial, love him as a footballer. Worked great. Not so sure now, but he's a great footballer. Lukaku, well, we know.
Yeah.
You're not going to get that every week. No chance. And it's never been the case. All the time I've been watching him, so I ain't going to change that. Leppard's not going to change his spots. Pogba, there's been games this season where I've watched him. Was at the Wolves game when they get beat with Wolves. Honestly, he was bullied all over the place by Wolves. And he shouldn't be doing that, because he's a world-class player. Matic just looks as if, you know, it's just been a season too far for him. And then you go to the back line, you know, they're a decent back line. But they're not a top six type back line. They're not that good. I don't think any of them are really good enough. And there's an interesting point. We think, how many of those back four, you know, would you take if you were Spurs? Were you Manchester City? Were you Liverpool? Were you Chelsea? Would you really look at them? Even Arsenal? Would you look at any of them?
No.
And I'm not. I don't think you would. And that's a massive story that the club's let itself get into that situation. So, not good enough in certain areas for where they want to be. But also, you can get over some of it with spirit. They showed a bit of it for a while, but they've now shown that they cannot keep that up. And that's a horrendous situation they now find themselves in, because that's not your manager's problem. That's something much deeper than that.
Yeah, Martial would start to break your heart, because there's so much talent there, but there is just a kind of sullen nature to his character, which makes you worry. And even for the Digne volley on 56 minutes, I mean, his turn and jump was like pitiful. And I know sometimes wingers and attacking players can look fairly pitiful in that scenario, but it was pitiful nonetheless. With Matic for the Sigurdsson goal, it's hard to even know what that was, because he has been a good pro. Maybe that's an example of what you're talking about, whereby there is a kind of cancerous centre to the thing, and then even the good pros get sucked into a sense of, well, what's the point?
You almost have to take individual moves apart. I can remember playing games where I'll go rush and close somebody down, and then you look behind you and there's nobody there. No one's come behind you. You're not going to do that next time.
Yeah.
Because you're looking a fool. And also you're expending useless energy. Because if you don't make it and the next one doesn't come behind you, then you're just wasting your time and your energy.
Yeah.
And you're the one that looks as if you're making the mistake. Now, if one or two people do that, then the rest of them think, well, I can't put myself out there, other than throwing in big daft challenges that are going to get you yellow cards, which is stupid.
Yeah.
So you do sometimes see that in teams, and they go through periods of that, and it just looks like that just now, which is such a shame, because, you know, there was a little period where it wasn't like that. And we go back to where some of the alarm bells rang for me was actually at that fabulous, fabulous game in Paris. They should have got battered. They absolutely should have got battered. Mm. They got lucky in many ways. They fought and they battled and they got it back. And it was an amazing, magical night. And then you sit a few days later and you think, actually, they should have been four down after 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And they were a shambles. It was a mess.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to get your head around. So, I mean, they've got themselves in a position now where they've got City tomorrow, which, you know, if they don't win that, they've got Chelsea at the weekend. Which is, if they lose that, season's completely finished. They have no chance at all. They won't get to the top four, not a hope of it. And at the moment, between Spurs, Arsenal and Chelsea, they still look like third favourites.
Yeah. As things stand, with Spurs, by the way, still at nil all, there's 10 minutes to go at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. They're in third on 68 points, 35 games played. Chelsea are on 67 points, 35 games played. Like, Manchester United are one, with their game in hand, admittedly against Man City, are just 3 points off fourth spot and Chelsea. And then Arsenal, with the game in hand, are just 1 point off fourth spot and Chelsea. So they've had a good weekend, Manchester United, considering what their result. I mean, things went their way. On Pogba, what are you seeing with him, like, that makes you wonder? Because, and this is no, like, indication of anything beyond he knows the cameras are on him at times as well, and it's a World Cup. But in that, there was a documentary on the French World Cup, and they had inside the dressing room access, and he was a real leader, you know, genuinely. And he was saying the right things, and he was banging tables, and he was talking to players, and he was the main man. And he had a good World Cup, you know, and it was used as a stick to batter Mourinho with. So you just wonder, like, is it that Everton away and Wolves don't get his juices going?
Can I make a suggestion, Joe?
Yeah, please, because I'm confused by Pogba all the time.
I think there might be something in the first three words of that sentence that you started there. When the camera was on him,
yeah,
and you just wonder, because there's so much focus on, you know, how he looks, the media position, you know, his social media position, you know, the statements that come out that way via, you know, Roy Oyla as well, his agent. You just wonder how much of it is about him and how much of it's about the team.
He backed that up with performances on the pitch in that World Cup, which kind of gives me a, you know, touch of, you know, benefit of the doubt to him. Maybe he was just really up for that World Cup.
Yeah, and hey, you can do that for a month. That's fine. I mean, I remember the game, the perfect example, when Lukaku was playing in the semi-finals against Brazil, and I was at that game, and Lukaku was unbelievable. He looked like the best centre forward on the planet by a country mile.
Yeah.
In the next game, he could hardly walk the length of the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, turn that on and turn that off, but you need to have the core strength. You know, you don't often think of, you talk about, you know, teams, we're talking about football just now. You think of the rugby teams in, you know, in the Six Nations. Do any of them really kind of cruise it very often? Can you imagine the Irish team not really acting as a group, as a team? Mm. It just doesn't happen. You don't get those sort of appeals. And the reason why I'm thinking of that, because recently I was reading some stuff up about the All Blacks and their attitude. And you're just thinking, they are so far ahead with their attitude. It doesn't matter how good a player you are. If you're not part of the group, get out. Just get out. Problem is with Manchester United, there's just too many of them that aren't part of the group.
Yeah.
And you compare that, I think, as you say, to Manchester City. Tell me who's not part of the group there, with the possible exception of Mendy, who I'm not convinced about at the moment. Everyone else, just absolutely part of the group.
Well, you've taken the next question out of my mouth, because the word I was going to use was clear out. You know, like, we're getting into the numbers where it's potentially clear out territory, or if they can identify the ringleaders of the bad attitude, get rid of them. I mean, if that is potentially Pogba, that's going to be a painful one.
Depends where you want to be going forward. Do you want to keep on doing the bandage thing, just the plaster here and there, and, you know, and limp on for a while? Or do Manchester United want to be Manchester United again, who are a team that maybe can get close to Man City, although it's slightly unfair because Manchester City are unbelievable. I think in terms of some of the greatest teams we've seen in the Premier League, I think they are fantastic when they're at their best.
Yeah.
But getting up there beside Liverpool and Manchester City, they just look miles. Well, have a look at the league table and the points. Mm. They're a long, long, long way behind. And that comment about how many of those players would you take from any of those teams? I mean, you start looking through the team, and maybe if you had a Pogba and you stuck him in Man City, it would be unbelievable because he would raise to be with them and he wouldn't feel like a superstar.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's the oldest one in the book. You don't complain at poor players. You only moan at good players, because the average players can't do anything. They're doing their best.
Yeah.
But good players, you have a go at them of not giving their all. I also give some of these players a bit of benefit because it's been a World Cup year and Pogba had a great World Cup and he put a lot of effort in and he'll have a dip. But there's been a lot of dips for a long time. So I'm saddened for them, because I was kind of, I don't want this end of season fight between those four to get these, third, fourth places. I don't want this to kind of fizzle out. Mm. I want it to keep on going. And I'd quite like Manchester United to be part of it. I think Man United fans would think the same too.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. The word is that Mike Phelan's going to be made technical director as well, because that's been an issue over the last number of years, just the directionless buying, depending on who the manager was. So that's a new departure for the club. On the title race, so Liverpool beat Cardiff, a proper banana skin, said Jurgen Klopp. And then Man City against Spurs was tense and tetchy. Even, like, the entire last 20 minutes was like a drawn-out final 2-3 minutes is supposed to be. It just descended into outright tension for the last 20 minutes. It was kind of compelling in a very different way to the Champions League game. What are your early thoughts on Phil Foden? How good's this guy going to be?
More than early thoughts, I've seen him quite a bit this season. I've been to see him quite a bit this season, and he should be England's playmaker for the next number of years. I don't see anyone else that's, you know, of that standard, of that ability.
Right.
Just the way he plays, always with his head up. It's classic. He runs with the ball and doesn't look at it. When the ball comes to him, he's looking there everywhere. He's not concentrating what's happening at his feet. He's all over where the ball is. He doesn't need to worry about that. His vision's really good. He loves getting forward into goal-scoring positions as well. Mm. He's technically one of the best I've seen. When I like the technical players, and all, like the Silvers and, you know, before that, Matters and all those sorts of players.
Yeah.
He's the closest that England have had for easily a generation, you know, for that kind of technical player. You're talking totally different type of player, but, you know, Gerrard's before that, but this guy could be a very different type of player. But one that, if you stuck him in a Barcelona side, he would look okay as well. I think he can be that good. He really can. Fabulous player, and he scored the goal. And the rest of the game, he was pretty good. And, you know, but to go and walk in there, and stand beside De Bruyne, and stand beside the two silvers and not look in any way out of place at that age is absolutely stunning. What a player he is.
Yeah, it's still just 18. It's kind of scary. On Liverpool, much was being made of the way they identified the Wijnaldum corner opportunity, you know, that he seemed to go in at half time and say, look, I'm standing around the penalty spot and whatever way their zonal marking's working, I'm kind of free. They're not marking me. It happened two or three times. And so what Klopp was saying, it's not one of our routines. They talked about it at half time. They made it happen. And it was a really good finish from Wijnaldum. And, you know, Jermaine Genius, for instance, was making the point that this is like a manager's dream. This is like maybe everything that's not happened at Manchester United in terms of leadership and ownership and cleverness and everybody in it together. This was a Liverpool team doing it. And ultimately, it broke the deadlock for them, which is, you know, kind of that crucial moment in all their games now, breaking the deadlock. This time it was on 57 minutes.
Yeah. They're horrifyingly hard to play against Liverpool. You're just watching that intensity that you keep on expecting to drop. And it just isn't dropping at the moment. Mm. I mean, I'm totally amazed by it that I've actually kept up. There was a period in the season where, you know, they were doing the high press and then they were coming off it a bit and then they were trying at other times. At the moment, they all seem to have it in them to be able to do it for long periods. The fact that that midfield, although not always showy, you know, you can change them about. There are a couple of changes you can make there, and they will all do it at that intensity. So you can give Henderson a game off, and you can give Wijnaldum a game off, and you can give Keita a game off, so that you keep it all really fresh. Well, we're all looking at, you know, Van Dijk at the back, and we're all looking at the two fullbacks flying forward and the three strikers. Wow. Those four in the midfield, everyone keeps on talking about the fact that they're missed out a little bit. Mm. Well, they're the ones that are winning it back. They're the ones that are pressing high so that those opportunities come. So, you know, I think that they've been really, really special the last wee while. And it's not in a showy way. It's just incredibly hard working and good intention. I mean, if you look at some of the stats about Wijnaldum in particular, he's quite often at the top of, you know, keeping the ball in all the clubs in the English Premier League. He's right at the top. He never gives the ball away. He's phenomenal at that. And it's a very typically Dutch thing to do. He's very, very special at it. But sometimes you don't notice it because he's, you know, he's just keeping the ball.
Yeah.
What a good skill to have. So the whole thing, can't see much of a weakness at Liverpool at the moment. And that's an absolute joy for them just now. So that's why, one of the reasons why they've stuck in there. I don't think they are quite as good player for player, but I don't know if you watched the end of the Spurs game.
Yeah.
I was watching it and thinking, well, you've got Zinchenko. Okay, well, world class, not sure, but, you know, he's doing all right. Mm-hmm. And then you've lost Silva, and then De Bruyne goes out, and you're thinking, wait a minute, this team shouldn't be anywhere near as good as they are, and they still are. It's absolutely brilliant to see, and that goes down to the coach. That's a fantastic thing from the coaches managed to deliver that and improve all the other players around those guys we're talking about. They're brilliant.
Yeah, it was
They still have to take up with the boredom of some teams sitting in.
Yeah.
Is that not getting in your wick at the moment? Did you watch the Chelsea game last night?
Yeah.
Burnley, honestly. I done something really sad today, right? This is how sad I am, right? I was writing a piece for a Chelsea website tomorrow, and I thought, I've not seen that level of time wasting for a long, long time, and I thought it was out of control. So I'd done a little study of it at the end of it. Of the last 11 minutes of the game that was played, the ball was in play for four.
It's almost impressive, really.
No, it is. I'm not complaining about Burnley. Burnley, well done, if you can do it. Mm. The referee, spot that one, for God's sake. Three players came down with alleged cramp. You know, doing all this, and Chelsea fell for a hook, line, and sinker with a kind of little kind of argument, argy-bargy at the end, which took up a minute and 40 seconds as well. But it was absolutely extraordinary to see that actually happen. So the referee goes and gets the 5 minutes to injury time up. I've already seen 7 minutes of players lying down. And that's before you do keeper wasting time. That's before you do substitutions. And honestly, it was a masterclass in time wasting. So well done. If the referee's not going to do it, you need to use everything.
Yeah.
But it can get a bit boring after a while. Spurs are finding it as well.
These mismatches are pretty boring, to say the least. By the way, just a quick one. With Sean Morrison wrapping his hands around Salah, you know, Neil Warnock was saying it was a silly penalty and, you know, the theatrics, I'd give him a 9.5 for the dive. And there's no doubt Salah could have stayed on his feet. But realistically, that referee will never give that decision unless Salah goes down there, will he?
Never. No, no chance at all. Yeah, and that's the problem. Okay. And it's a kind of catch-22. You hate to see that diving and throwing yourself to the ground, and it kind of really sticks in your throat. But when's the last time you've seen the referee giving a penalty kick when somebody was pulled back slightly but kept on trying to stay in their feet? It just doesn't happen. They don't do it. And and it's a real conundrum. What to do then? Do you start saying to the referees, give it anyway, you know, give the slightest little tug? It's because, you know, what is a penalty kick or what should be a penalty kick has changed so much over the last 15 to 20 years. It used to have to be basically stonewall. I mean, I can remember playing at Anfield and somebody have to come up with a club and hit you in the back of the head to get a penalty kick there. But you knew what a penalty was. Just now, do you really actually know what a penalty kick is now? It's so hard to tell. So there's a degree of me to feel sorry for the referees. And by the way, that's going to be the tricky bit next season when you get the VAR. You get plenty of people. If you go back and look at it and see a technical penalty kick, I think you're going to see a hell of a lot more penalty kicks next season.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I want to ask you about Billy McNeil. One last tiny point before that. There was a really interesting exchange, I thought, between Jeff Shreve and Pep Guardiola after the win over Spurs, where Shreve sort of said, like, you know, this was about the way you won that game. It was about character, you know. And Pep could have easily said, yeah, it was about character. It was great, you know, we showed character. But he deliberately just said to Shreves, and he said it twice because Shreves went back again and said, no, they've shown character the whole time. They've shown character for 24 months. It is a very British and English thing that hacking a few balls away and some kind of last-ditch headers are almost emblematic of character, more so than playing football on tough nights against crowded defenses when tackles are flying and you're probably getting kicked a few times. That almost the character that's involved in that. John Giles would be here in studio and call it moral courage. You know, the Terry Butcher walking off is prized more so than, and I understand the grit and the hard running, and Man United could do with some of it, but there is such character in the courage to play the game the right way against all opposition that you kind of overlook and you just say, oh, well, that's just talent. But like, there's such character in it as well.
That I agree, there's more character in that. And I've always thought that's the case. You know, remember playing through a home career and up against it under pressure, be it in, you know, playoffs to go up or, you know, cup finals or, you know, really, really intense games where you know that if you're the one that makes a mistake, you would be remembered for that forever. But still being brave enough to come and get the ball, take the ball and always wanting the ball. And you absolutely know, you know around you who doesn't want it, who's not got the bottle to do it. Yeah, they might throw in a big tackle now and again. Everyone's going, yeah, well, what bravery. And you're thinking, you're bottling it, mate. You've not got... And that's, again, I'm not just being an ex-pro saying, oh, you have to be a player to see it. Because I don't always see it at all in the games that I'm playing. But when you're on the pitch, you see it and you know it. Who's showing themselves all the time. And that's the character he's talking about. And that's exactly it, because that's Pep Guardiola. That's exactly who he is. So the goalkeeper still willing to play it from the back. You know, Stones, when he's on, still willing to play it from the back. When you're under pressure and you're getting a high press against you, yeah, that's as much character as anything you're going to show in the game.
Yeah,
I certainly thought so anyway. That's purely because I couldn't stick my head in like Terry Butcher anyway.
Terry Butcher's listening somewhere going, poof, well.
He's top man, Terry.
Christian Eriksen has just scored a fantastic goal for Spurs to nick them the game against Brighton. Left-footed, beautiful technique, pinged the ball. The ball didn't spin, it just flew into the bottom corner. So Spurs have beaten Brighton by a goal to nil. 88th minute strike from Eriksen. Before we go, Billy McNeil, lots of Celtic fans in this part of the world, as you might know, passed away at the age of 79. Captain the Lisbon Lions, 4 titles as a manager as well, plenty of titles as a player. And he had a record 822 appearances for Celtic. I was reading today, never once substituted. So he played every minute of those 822 appearances for Celtic, which is something else. It's not overstating it to call Billy McNeil an icon around Celtic, I presume.
It's more than Celtic. It's bigger than that. Really struggling for the right words. You know, legend just doesn't really do it. What he stood for at Celtic, Scottish football, is incredible. I grew up watching Billy McNeil and that team. My team that I watched was just the end of the Lisbon Lions and start of the next group. And Billy straddled that period. And he was just awesome the way he was respected by everyone around him. Mm. He was the epitome of what you would want as a Celtic man. He was kind of stylish. He was really cool. Always clean cut. Never seemed to do anything wrong. Very rarely got, you know, over upset with it. Always utterly brave. You know, every single player looked up to him. And you didn't even need to know. You didn't need to be in that dressing room to know. They all looked to him. He was the leader. But he didn't do it with fear. He did it because he led the way as the right way to be as a person as well as a footballer. Mm. When I think of Billy, all the times that I met him over the years, the first word that comes, it isn't all those things. It's gentleman. That's the thing that beats them all. Because he was an utter gentleman, a fabulous family man. A wonderful family as well, who I got to know a bit in the last few years there as well. So as somebody who'd watched Celtic and followed him over those years when he was playing, it was just a stunning icon that you think could never be beaten. You know, I remember one of my first games, I remember he scored the header against Rangers in the Cup final that I actually went to see. Amazingly, I think I was his first signing as an S-form for Celtic when I was 13. He came to the club as manager. And I was signed about a day or two later from the Celtic Boys Club. He wanted to make sure that the Boys Club players were coming through into Celtic at the time. Each time I ever met him after that, he was just wonderful. And although he knew that you hugely admire him, he talked to you absolutely as an equal. You know, there was no airs and graces about him at all. You know, lifting that European Cup should have been two, by the way. Should have won against Feyenoord as well. Really unlucky not to win that one. And just, as I say, getting to know the family a little bit. I did a documentary in Joxtine a while back and interviewed Billy when, you know, he was, you know, you could see things were not going quite right. Mm. But he was still desperate to show that pride. And he did talk really well that day. And we used some of the fabulous phrases and memories that he brought around. Celtic fans will be devastated, but to be honest, the whole of Scotland is. He is one of those players. And for your Rangers fan, you still think the same way about the guy. He was amazing. Mm.
That's a brilliant tribute, Pat. Thanks a million. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Pleasure.
Herrera, what type of midfielder is Herrera? He's not a box-to-box. He's not defensive. He can't do a f***ing killer pass. Why is he on the f***ing pitch? For what? See him come here and f***ing boss us at Old Trafford. This is Man United talking. See him come here and f***ing boss us. Rojo, what is he? What was his tactics? As soon as you get Rojo, just f***ing do it. We're not f***ing Stoke. We're Man f***ing United here. Watch. That was diabolical, that. Martial is playing against a f***ing centre midfielder in doubt. Take the f***ing on. Take him on and f***ing do it. We're Man f***ing United here. That was diabolical, that.
Welcome back. So confirmation, Spurs have beaten Brighton by a goal to nil. Christian Eriksen with the late winner for Spurs, and Watford did manage to equalise against Southampton, and that has finished 1-1 at Vicarage Road. Meanwhile, between Shamrock Rovers and Bowes, it's still 1-0 Bohemians after that Dinny Corcoran goal in the first half. We're going to touch on Leeds before we say goodnight. Danny Mills, former Leeds player, of course, with us. Evening, Danny.
Good evening.
Things were going very nicely for Leeds, and now it seems like automatic promotion hopes have taken a real dent. They lost to Wigan and Brentford over the weekend. What happened?
People will say that they've run out of steam. I don't think they have run out of steam. I've said for a while, Leeds had a little bit of a blip. But Leeds have one way of playing. It's very intense, very high tempo. There isn't really a plan B. And if they don't get one or two goals up before half-time, teams work them out and they start to struggle. And when you're missing chances and chance after chance, course, it leaves you open to counter-attacks, and that's what's happened. And sadly, it looks like they've now blown the chances of automatic promotion.
They're 3 points off Sheffield United. Norwich are 6 points clear at the top with two games to go, and they have a better goal difference. So Sheffield United really are the ones they have to catch, and they have Ipswich at the weekend, bottom of the table, Ipswich. So you'd kind of back Sheffield United to win that one anyway. When you say that.
Well, if they win that Saturday, then the game against obviously Aston Villa for Leeds on Sunday is irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to matter. Leeds are not going to catch them. You know, they're already 11 goals behind. So if Sheffield United win that, it could be 12. Leeds are not going to win the last two games. You know, 6-0 each, and of course, you know, Sheffield United are not going to lose those. So no, it's disappointing when you drop into third. It's very, very difficult to pick up the morale.
And when you say they haven't run out of steam, like they're still managing to press, they're still managing to play the Bielsa way, you're still pretty impressed with how they're going about their business in general terms.
Yeah, they're still playing very, very high tempo. They've now got another injury problem. They've got no left back. Alioski's now out for the rest of the season. So that's going to be a little bit of a problem. Might have to switch maybe to three at the back or change it round a little bit, throw somebody else in there. No, they're still very, very fit. They're still trying very, very hard.
Mm.
When you have that one way of playing, and Leeds almost play sort of two centre-backs, a holding midfield player, the full-backs bomb on, everybody else bombs on, and sometimes they get exposed. If Calvin Phillips leaves that central area in front of the two centre-halves, they are very, very open, and that's been a problem. And when you're not taking chances, and they still have been creating chances, you're going to pay for that. They haven't been clinical enough.
Makes for an exciting brand of football. I presume Bielsa is still massively popular around Elland Road.
Oh, of course. The concern would be that if they don't get promoted, will he stay at the football club?
Right.
You know, that would be a big, big concern. I think that's maybe a 50-50. You know, the championship, everybody knows, it is long and it's arduous and it's difficult. And it's not an easy division to get out. But obviously, as I said, dropping into the playoffs, Villa have all the momentum at the moment. Well, they've won 10 straight games they've won at the moment.
Mm.
So they're in the ascendancy. It looks like it could easily be... it looks like Leeds would probably get Derby at the moment or Middlesbrough or even Bristol if they got into it in the first leg of the playoffs. And after that, you know, it's a bit of a lottery.
Yeah, no doubt. And if Leeds could somehow navigate their way through the playoffs and make it up to the Premier League, Bielsa invariably would stay. How would they be suited to Premier League football, Danny?
I think they need a fair bit of investment in terms of personnel. They would have to go out and get a decent striker, a really good Premier League striker that is going to get them sort of 15 goals a season. That is without a shadow of a doubt. They've got some good young players coming through, but again, realistically, they would probably need three or four players. But I think there would be investment there from the owners. Obviously, Bielsa knows, we know what his scouting system's like after Spygate and all that sort of stuff. So we know how good that is. He will be able to attract maybe some foreign players as well. And I think, obviously, with 38,000 people there every single week, without question, the sponsorship that will come in as well, and obviously the Premier League money, there should be money for investment if they can manage to get up.
Meanwhile, your other former club are in action at Old Trafford tomorrow. We're in the midst of this rather extraordinary title race, which continues to propel along, both sides getting points and getting wins. So Liverpool are too clear again. City have this game in hand tomorrow at Old Trafford. It's actually difficult to know what response to expect from Manchester United. You really wouldn't be surprised if they wilted completely or if they bounced back in front of their home crowd against City.
No, it's strange you said that. I was just driving back from Liverpool, actually, and listening to an English radio show, and Pep Guardiola was saying something very, very similar. He said, you know, yes, you know, they are low. They have obviously been dented, but it's a derby. They could come out and produce one of the performances of the season, and it could be difficult. But I also see it the other way, as you're right. If City score a couple early on, it could end up 4-5, even more. Yeah. I don't know. It could be almost a record. You know, City, when they go for it, they can absolutely tear teams apart. So I think it's going to be an intriguing result. Manchester United clearly need to bounce back. There seems a lot of issues now behind the scenes. Everybody thought it was about Jose Mourinho. Everybody blamed him. And now those same issues are starting to rear their head again. But for Manchester City, who stumbled past Tottenham at the weekend, you know, Tottenham had some very good chances. It's a must-win game, simple as that.
Yeah. Those last, we had Pat Nevin on the show earlier on, and we were just making the point that those last maybe even 20 minutes felt like the kind of final 2 or 3 minutes of a game should feel. You know, there is, of course, a tension in this City team. How could there not be?
Yeah, and I think after all the emotional events and what they went through in the Champions League against Tottenham, you know, and it was very, very hot in Manchester at the weekend. I mean, unbelievably so. I spent 5 years there, and it pretty much rained every single day.
Yeah.
And I think it was 20 degrees by about 11 in the morning. You know, people were getting sunburned left, right and centre.
Yeah.
So all of those things made it. It was always going to be slightly a dull game, and nowhere near as exciting. But you're right. When it's 1-0, there is always going to be that edginess. Mm. That, you know, it can be a slip, it can be a wonder goal, a bad decision from the referee. So I think if City win tomorrow night, I would say that they go on and win the title, because I think after that will give them the confidence to really kick on.
Well, after that, it's Burnley away on the Sunday, Leicester at home, and then Brighton away on the 12th.
Well, Burnley away could be tricky, but you'd expect them to win that. Leicester at home, you expect to win. Mm. I don't see any other result in that. The only tricky one, and as we've seen this season, if Brighton have to get something out of that last game and they park the bus and they park everything else that they've got, you know, with Duffy and Dunk and everybody else behind the ball, and City have to win that game, it might just be a little bit nervous. It could be a little bit nerve-wracking, and we could go down to one of the great moments like we had a few years ago, where obviously with the Aguero moment.
Yeah.
So, but I think if they beat Manchester United tomorrow, and I think they will, I don't think that will be a huge problem. City will then go on and win the title.
Yeah. Well, whoever finishes second, they pretty much can chalk it up as about the best second place performance across a league season that we've ever seen in the Premier League. It's been pretty extraordinary. Danny, thanks a million for your time. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Cheers. Danny Mills there with his thoughts on Leeds, who haven't run out of steam, actually. Just missing some chances over the weekend and the match tomorrow. We're back in just 1 second.
Ronaldinho. This time, Messi is onside. And it's an identical chip from the young substitute. Brilliant! And Barcelona wrap it up in style in the Camp Nou.
Messi. Oh, brilliant skill from Lionel Messi. Surging forward with real menace here. Brilliant from Messi. Oh, what a goal that is!
It's 2-0. It's Messi. He's scored against an English club now. It's Manchester United. And a crucial, crucial time with 20 minutes to go.
Brilliant ball from Berenguer. Is this the opener? Yes, it is! That's what they came to see. And he's provided the touch. As our arms are reached up to the gods. Stylish finish, which Maradona himself would have been proud of.
Inside, it's Messi!
Oh! Oh! Again, the menacing man arrives and sinks his flaming spear into the hearts of Real Madrid. Astonishing from Messi. All the pieces falling into place. Messi, born in the crossfire hurricane, and he is jumping Jack Flash right here.
Yeah, welcome back. So they're into added time between Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians. Nine-man Shamrock Rovers, by the way. They've played pretty much the whole second half, down to nine men. Dinny Corcoran with the goal for Bowes. He hit the penalty, it was saved, and he knocked in the rebound. That was in the first half. So Bowes closing in on a big win over Shamrock Rovers. As we mentioned already, if you're just tuning in, Christian Eriksen with a late goal for Spurs against Brighton. They were 1-0 winners. And Watford equalised in the end against Southampton. Shane Long scoring for Southampton, finished 1-1. In that game. Earlier on, by the way, we asked you three questions. This is our big prize for the Rugby World Cup. How many times have Munster won the Heineken Champions Cup? Twice. Which French team were in Munster's Champions Cup pool this year? That was Castres. And who is Munster's all-time leading try scorer? Simon Zeebo. Congratulations to Jim Daly from Navan, County Meath, Owen Griffin in County Clare, and Sharon Ward in Bettystown. You've all won a green ticket to come along to our special event on May the 9th in Dublin, where one lucky person is going to win a trip to Japan, all with thanks to Heineken, worldwide partner to Rugby World Cup 2019 in Japan. That is pretty much just done for this evening. Tomorrow morning, as usual, OTBAM, is live on all our social channels. Join us from 7:45. And then a packed show here in the evening. Plenty of good stuff on the way. And we'll be keeping a very close eye on events at Old Trafford. Tom Dunn's on the way. Good luck.
With guilt like your eyes.